Hi there. Today, I'm excited to welcome Caroline Kasson to the show. As a partner at Vitalize Venture Capital, Caroline has spent almost a decade diving deep into the venture capital world, helping shape the future of work through her investments. Her journey into VC, though, started with incubating a drone startup at GE Ventures and was built on a foundation of corporate finance that took her from Chicago to London to Silicon Valley and beyond. But beyond her impressive resume, Caroline's passion for supporting entrepreneurs and nurturing innovation truly sets her apart. She's joining us today from her hometown of Madison, Wisconsin, where she balances the fast-paced VC life with a love for outdoor adventures with her family. Hi there, Caroline. Thank you so much for joining us today for another episode of Office Hours.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, Caroline and I have known each other from the Vitalize ecosystem. We are have worked in the past with Vitalize's Angel Network. And so Caroline and I have been able to go through a diligence process together, emailed many a time back and forth. This is actually our first time chatting live, I think. So I'm so glad to have you join me.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks again. That's weird that this is our first time, but I think you're right.
I know. I think it is. Many phone calls, but I don't think ever a Zoom call, which is kind of hilarious. But I want to jump in because I think there's so many people in the hospitality and travel startup space that are really curious to learn more about fundraising and raising capital. I know when we, you know, worked with you guys, we worked primarily with your angel group. And so that was a really interesting take on raising capital in general. But your experience mostly comes from the VC world. And so I'm going to ask you a little bit about your story and about you, and we'll eventually get to how that relates to what you do now in your business. So I just want to ask you to kick things off. What was kind of the experience or moment that led you in your story to enter into the VC world? I know you started out in corporate finance. You know, tell me a little bit about why you're even in this part of the industry.
Yeah, it's super random. And I think a lot of people kind of fall into venture capital unexpectedly. And that was the case with me. I started my career in corporate finance in a rotational program at GE, where you would rotate every 6 months, you would move to a different city or country, to a different business within GE. And so I got to live all over the place, from Chicago to Atlanta to London. And then while I was in London, I found out that my fourth rotation placement was going to be in Menlo Park in the Bay Area at GE Ventures. And it's funny because at the time, like, I really knew nothing about venture capital, not very little about startups. Like, it's just not something I had been exposed to in my education or my upbringing. And I was like, okay, this sounds cool. So I moved out to San Francisco, and I actually wasn't working on the venture side of things. I was tasked with helping incubate a startup in the drone space that was a joint venture between GE Ventures and GE Aviation. And so, very long story short, I got to help grow that startup from about 5 employees to over 50 employees. While also working in the GE Ventures office, I was able to attend investment committee meetings and things like that whenever I wanted to. And so I was kind of learning at the same time how to operate a startup and also how VCs think about things. And that was just, like, honestly, the most pivotal experience in my career that kind of launched me into what I do today.
If someone's listening to this and they're curious about getting into VC, I think there's a lot that goes into it. But just kind of given your background and your story, would you recommend someone take that kind of similar path, whether it's, you know, working at an incubator or trying to work within a startup and really get understanding from that side of things? Or would you approach it a different way?
Yeah, I think there's, like, 3 kind of traditional ways to get into venture that are probably the most likely and the most common, which is 1, get an MBA as a way to, like, pivot. I see a lot of people that start in, like, consulting or banking, they go get an MBA and then they go work for, like, a large venture fund. That's not always the path to go to a smaller venture fund. I think a lot of the smaller ones really don't care if you have an MBA or don't have an MBA. And that's definitely true with Vitalize. It really didn't matter. And so the second path, I would say, is having operating experience. So yeah, like, if you're really passionate about getting into venture, a good way to do that is go work for a startup for a couple of years, especially one that's on a high growth trajectory. And then you have relevant experience to bring to a fund. You can really get, you know, into the nitty gritty with the companies that you're working with and help them from that perspective with your own experience. So MBA, working for a startup, or the third one, to your point, would be starting out with, like, an incubator or an accelerator, where you're kind of getting the mix of both. You're getting to work very early stage, get your hands dirty with helping the startups, and you're also getting the investing experience, and then kind of work your way up from like an incubator or accelerator into more of like a traditional VC role. So I think those are kind of the three paths that I would recommend for someone looking to get into the space.
And then at that point, when you were at GE Ventures, well, still under your rotational program, what then brought you to Vitalize? Or I know the story is a little bit more nuanced than that. So can you tell us about how you actually made that transition?
Yeah, great question. I'll try to make it as quick as possible because it's a long story. But basically, I had got connected with Gail, who's the founder of Vitalize, through the Notre Dame network, because I went to Notre Dame for grad school. She went there for undergrad. So that's how we got connected. But Gail at the time was actually running Irish Angels, which is an angel group made up of Notre Dame alumni. And she started Irish Angels and grew it to be one of the largest and most active angel groups in the country. So what happened was GE as a whole was struggling when I was there, and GE made the decision to shut down GE Ventures because at the time it was spending a lot of money and not yet making a lot of money. I think if they had waited for those investments to play out, it would have been a different story. But needless to say, they shut down GE Ventures and shut down or sold all the startups that were being incubated within. And so I basically either had to leave if I wanted to stay in venture, or I could have gone back into like a regular GE business and done what I was doing before. But after dipping my toes in venture, it was way too exciting to pass up on. So long story short, I had connected with Gail. I ended up joining her at the time at Irish Angels in 2018, over 6 years ago now. And after a couple of years running Irish Angels and Vitalize side by side, so Gail raised Vitalize Fund 1 while she was running Irish Angels. And so we were kind of doing both. And we ultimately realized our vision was more with what we were doing at Vitalize. Like, we just really wanted to see where we could take that. And it was going to be hard to do both at the same time. And so we ultimately brought on a new managing director who took over Irish Angels. We're still very close with her. She's running Irish Angels, still doing awesome things over there. But we made the decision to focus solely on Vitalize. And so we've since splitting away, we've now raised a fund too, and we've launched Vitalize Angels that you were referring to, which is our 500-person angel community. But that's like the really long, convoluted story of my transition to Vitalize.
No, that's great. And I think it makes a lot of sense how and why you guys transition that way. Also, the Notre Dame Network being involved in there obviously is near and dear to my heart because that's how I got connected with you guys in the first place. And obviously, it became such a huge part of our investment round, but so many other founders as well. That Notre Dame Network is crazy. But I'm curious, what was kind of one of those bigger challenges when you started in going from a really large corporation from GE to a very small startup environment? I know, you know, Irish Angels, I don't know if you considered it small or large, but I feel like the team itself is pretty small. So how did you manage that transition?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah. So Irish Angels was just 3 employees. And I had come from, at the time, GE was over 400,000 employees. And so that was all I knew since, you know, graduating from college and working. All I knew was like massive company. And so for me, the biggest challenge was honestly the lack of resources. Like, I was used to having anything at my fingertips. And at GE, if I wanted to like use a new software that was going to help make my job easier, like I would just put it on my corporate credit card. I didn't even have to get approval unless it was like over $5,000. And so I just felt like I had access to a lot of tools and resources at my fingertips. And then going to Irish Angels, it was really truly was a startup, and there's not a lot of budget at small venture funds or angel groups. And so I learned how to be like, in the end, it was a great thing, but it was a hard transition. I had to learn how to be very scrappy and really figure things out without a lot of resources, utilizing my own knowledge of others in our network, and just kind of figuring things out. And also at GE, you very much do one thing. Like, even within finance, you're not like doing finance for all of GE. You're like doing a very specific product line within a specific group of within GE. And so, you know, going to a startup, you're doing a little bit of everything. So I was learning how to do HR and marketing and like sales and growing our membership and investing in deals and just like the whole gambit. And so, yeah, to answer your question, the hardest part was definitely the shift in resources.
And what about the risk too? Because I obviously imagine experience at GE probably wasn't very risk forward or risk heavy. So given that you then stepped into first Angel Network, then obviously into Vitalize, where venture is truly about taking risks and calculated ones. So how did you manage risk? Do you think you had the appetite for it beforehand, or did you just kind of form it?
Yeah, the way that I think about risk, I think a lot of it has to do with timing in our lives. And everyone has different times in their life where they're more prone to taking risk, more willing to do it, and other times in life where maybe it doesn't make as much sense. And so for me, like, I had to actually take a pay cut when I went from GE to Irish Angels. But it was a time in my life where I was really young and single, and I had savings that I, you know, from my time at GE, and I knew it was going to pay off in the long run and was what I wanted to try and wanted to do. And so I was willing to take the risk at that time. But I think, like, at the place I'm at now with, like, a baby and a toddler, a family to support, kids are expensive. Like, I don't think I would be taking these kinds of risks today. So I think for everyone just has to evaluate, you know, where they're at in their life and what level of risk they're willing to accept.
There's so much to unpack there. We won't be able to now, but I'd love to talk to you at one point about, like, analyzing founders as well and the stage of their lives and how they think about risk too, because I think that must be so interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, before we get to that though, in your career, we were talking about how you transitioned and all of that. Now, when it comes to evaluating startups, I'm curious if there's any steps or experiences you took along the way, whether it be learned or passed down to you by Gail or other mentors. Are there any steps or experiences or tools that you took advantage of to really accelerate that learning process for you? Because you've been there for a number of years now. You've obviously picked up a ton of skills along the way. Mm-hmm. But were there any specific tools or steps that you took to kind of accelerate that process?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think one tool that I actually learned from a mentor at GE, and then Gail is also very much this way too. And this is going to sound silly because it's, like, so basic, but attention to detail has been a tool in my toolkit that I've learned from them that's really taken me a long way, because over the years, you know, I've worked with so many different people and have been shocked at how many people, they just don't pay attention to things like spelling or grammar or just basic things like making sure math adds up before you share something more broadly. And Gail has always been a stickler for detail, and it's, like, ingrained in me now. And I feel like it's taken me, it's brought me a long way in this career, because you're constantly communicating with external stakeholders, whether it's your founders in your portfolio, founders you're talking to about potentially investing in, LPs that have invested in your fund, the social media is a big thing in VC. Like, there are so many external stakeholders, and I've learned that it's very important to pay attention to those things, because we're constantly sharing stuff externally, and it matters for reputation, you know, how everything comes across.
I'm curious if in the process of, like, having that attention to detail, do you think that that's something that you look for in the founders that you guys work with, or are you picking up on other qualities and maybe that's something you're advising them on?
Yeah, very much looking for it. And I know it sounds silly because, like, you would think most founders would have it, but some just don't.
No, I don't think that seems silly at all. At all, actually. Yeah. I think it's a really important point.
I'd go so far as to, I ask for, like, prior monthly investor updates that they've sent out, and I really go line by line and see what kinds of things they included. You know, even if, like, there's a lot of spelling errors in one of them, I'm like, huh, that's kind of a red flag. Like, so I do really look for attention to detail among a number of other qualities too.
Yeah, that's great. I'm curious what other qualities you guys find. And I'm not necessarily asking if you look for these in the mm-hmm. beginning when you're reviewing a founder, but maybe so when you see founders down the road, qualities that you see to be very successful or help them be successful. Obviously, yeah. Attention to detail. What are some other highlights for you?
Yeah, it's one that I still ask myself every day, like, what should I be looking for? And I try to look at our most successful founders and ask myself, like, what were they like at the time that we diligenced them? And sometimes that's hard because it's, like, 10 years. By the time you know they're on the rocket ship trajectory, you know, we had diligenced them maybe like 10 years prior or something. So it's like, it's really hard to gather these data points, but some qualities that I think we always see in our top founders, they have a big vision. So they're not just trying to build like a tool or a feature. They're building like an end-to-end solution, and they have like a massive vision for the company. They want to do something bigger than themselves. They have like a reason or a passion. Typically, I find the most successful founders came across a problem in their day-to-day work or their day-to-day life, and they're trying to solve that specific problem. It's not just like, oh, I want to be a startup founder and I want to have an exit in any space. It's like they have a very specific purpose, I guess I would say. I think they're very attentive to detail. I think successful founders, they have a drive that it can be hard to analyze over like a Zoom call, but based on asking like different types of questions, you can see really how driven somebody is, and by doing references.
Okay, obviously references, that's huge. I don't want to like talk over that. Yeah. References are important. I'm curious, the questions that you asked to analyze drive, do you have any examples by any chance? I know I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I'm trying to think. So like I'll ask them a lot about prior experiences and how they handled certain things, how they've overcome adversities in their life. I like to hear about kind of just trying to get a sense of like how they're telling a story can give me a sense of how they've been driven throughout their life, if that makes sense.
Definitely.
It's more of an art than a science. And I find just trying to get to know who they are as a person is the best way that I've been able to get an inkling of these things. I know every VC kind of has maybe a different toolkit or different like list of questions that they typically ask. But for me, it's more about getting to know them as a person. And then it kind of just naturally comes out.
Yeah. Is there a certain type of you know, founder profile that you tend to really stay away from? Is it like specific qualities or maybe just an overall profile that you tend to avoid? Not necessarily that they're a bad founder, maybe just like not a good fit.
So we have found that we try to avoid any type of like arrogance or, and this isn't really a quality, but when a founder really tries to rush us in the process, it's almost like sometimes there's a false sense of urgency that they're creating. Sometimes it's a real urgency because they really do have tons of interest in their round. But even still, like if they really want to work with a fund because of that fund's value, like they should give them a couple days and let them take their time to like, it's like marrying someone for 10 years, like the relationship is. And so like, you really want to make sure it's a fit on both sides. And when founders are like, we need an answer by end of day today, our round is oversubscribed, I'm usually just like, you're not the type of founder, you know, that we want to work with, because you could at least give us a day or two if you really wanted to work with us.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I want to bring us back to, you talked about purpose about two questions ago, and I wanted to follow up on it because I know you guys have a pretty clear vision for the types of companies that you like to invest in. You tend to look at future of work, and apologies if that's changed, but at least when we were, you know, talking a lot about Vitalize, you guys focused pretty heavily on future of work. Can you talk to me a little bit about why and what that thesis looks like for you guys?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think every fund, you know, has their own thesis. And when we were at Irish Angels, we were very much generalists. And I think we just knew we wanted to become an expert at something. And how that helps is like other funds, when they see a future of work deal, they like think of Vitalize. And so that's why it can, I mean, generalist funds can do great, don't get me wrong, but like, I think it can help to have a focus when it comes to deal sourcing and sharing deals, because others think of you for that. So we knew we wanted to focus on something. And it just happened to be what both Gail and I are interested in, and kind of what our backgrounds are in. Like for me, having worked at GE, I used all kinds of tools in my day-to-day work. I was subscribed to like a million different softwares that I used to be more efficient and more productive. And so like, I'm just really interested in the space. But we decided that we did not want to focus on what a lot of people think of as future of work, which is like just HR tech or just like tools. Like, we really believe that the future of work is in these end-to-end holistic solutions that completely redefine the way something is done today. And so that's what we're looking for. It can be any industry. It can be any type of software. We've done sales tech, marketing tech, fintech, we've done insure tech, we've done something in the vet tech space. Like, we don't care what space it is. We just care that it's completely redefining an existing workflow.
No, that's super interesting. I think when we were originally looking to potentially bring in capital, the first company that was brought up was you guys, mostly because you guys have found a focus. I know I've seen just from in my own research that funds sometimes over the course of different, when they're bringing in different, is not considered a round in your eyes. Is it considered a round, or is it more considered like a fund?
Raising a new fund. Yeah.
A fund. Right. Great. When you're raising first fund versus second fund and hopefully future funds for you guys, are you thinking about modifying the thesis internally for you guys or externally? Or because I know certain funds do that. So are you guys thinking about adjusting that thesis as time goes on? Or is it enough generalist that you guys can kind of flux depending on the fund?
Yeah, we kind of view it as like we're always changing our thesis based on what we're learning. And so the way we've thought about future of work has changed over time. And then we originally started as future of work and learning, then kind of shifted to just future of work. Then we started calling future of work work tech because we felt like that better encompassed the way we think about future of work. And I just share those examples not to make it sound like we've pivoted three times, but just to share that like the thesis is always evolving as we're seeing different things in market and learning and developing our thesis over time. So I think it will always be future of work or work tech for all of our funds, but it's always going to maybe be slightly different as we evolve and learn more.
Awesome. No, that's great. I want to ask you a little bit as well when you consider investing. I like asking people about this question when we were, kind of learning more about the raising process. And so the VC space can get very filled with trends, hype cycles, people considering what's hot at the moment. And I'm curious, how do you guys differentiate that between a passing trend and a genuinely promising opportunity? I think being in the workforce industry, you might be insulated a little bit from that, but yet maybe not so. So I'm curious, how have you kind of analyzed trends versus really genuine opportunities?
Yeah, I'll be the first to admit it's very easy to get caught up in trends, especially I was based in the Bay Area for the last 7 years. And I found that while I was living there, it was easy to get on these like bandwagons. And we've actually done a few what I would call like Silicon Valley hype deals where we got in them specifically because like all the top Bay Area funds were in these deals. And we thought like, we're so lucky as a small Midwest fund to get into this deal. And like those have ended up being some of our worst deals because we weren't in it for the right reasons. We were just kind of following in those cases. And those were like small checks early on, and we've learned from those. And that's what this industry is all about, learning from, your previous investments. So definitely don't regret them, but have since learned to kind of stick to our gut and our intuition. And we believe in investing in like very capital efficient businesses, founders who aren't just trying to get the highest valuation. They actually want to like grow their company's revenue and do what's best for the company. And so that's another quality we look for as well in founders.
I know you mentioned that you guys are Midwest based. Obviously, coming from being on Notre Dame's campus, you probably have a lot of access to also Midwest founders. Are you guys, did you see yourself as an advantage or disadvantage, depending upon deal flow and things like that, being based in the Midwest?
Yeah, I think at this point, I don't see it as an advantage or a disadvantage. I think we have built a network. We've got over 800 friends at other VC funds between Gail and myself from coast to coast. And so at this point, everything is so virtual that I don't think it matters. But for me personally, it did help me being boots on the ground for 7 years in San Francisco, because that's where like I built the network I have today. And I think had I started out in Madison, Wisconsin, I wouldn't have the network I have today for sharing deals back and forth and whatnot.
Do you think that founders need to be based in New York or San Francisco or, maybe Austin?
I don't personally. I think founders can be wherever they want to be. I do see some advantage, though, to have some like core team members together. Like, I think for startups, it makes a lot of sense, you know, to at least have a decent amount of in-person presence as you're working out those early kinks and just figuring everything out. And then I think when you get to a point where you've like found product market fit, I think it's totally fine to be distributed. And we won't like invest or not invest based on where teams are. We've invested in a lot of fully distributed teams from day one, but that's just something I've noticed more recently, and actually just talked with one of our companies last week who they were fully distributed and now they are actually reconvening. The core team is moving to LA together because they felt like they were kind of at a disadvantage. And so it's just interesting to see people kind of going the other direction now.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I think we felt the same way as a company. We're fully distributed. I mean, the nature of the business is virtual work, so it's hard for us not to be accepting of that. But our core team, you know, we convene all the time, usually in New York because my family's based there and I'm, you know, typically based there, or any other cities that we're visiting in. But yeah, that in-person presence is so important and so valuable.
Yeah.
So, you know, as kind of you're making all these learnings and adjusting, I know this from internal experience, but you guys focus a lot on making sure you can provide resources to portfolio companies. What are some important assets that you feel you bring to the table with other founders that are important for maybe other startups to consider when looking for VCs to work with?
Yeah, I love this question. I think you always want to find a VC that you think will be helpful to you. We really pride ourselves on our network because we don't have a small team. A lot of VCs, for example, larger VCs, they maybe have a really big like platform team of people that just work with the companies every day. We're a three-person team, small fund. And so our value actually lies in our network with our 500-person angel community, all of our LPs, plus our 800 co-investors. Like, we just have so many different places we can tap into, whether it's intros to, you know, investors for your next round of financing, whether it's intros to potential customers or intros to maybe you're looking for an advisor in like a certain area of your business. Like, whatever it is, we can help you find that right person. And that's really our sweet spot for helping companies.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I'm asking this for maybe some of the newer founders who maybe haven't started raising yet and they're curious, what do you mean by platform team? Because I knew when I was looking into that, I was like, what do you mean by that? Is that a physical platform? Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. So a lot of VCs have the function that they call platform, and it basically just means like their way of supporting their portfolio companies. And so some people will have literally a team of like, I don't know, 5 to 10 people whose sole job is to help the companies. These people are not doing any of the investing, anything on that side. Like, they're literally just getting into the nitty gritty with the companies. And they maybe have someone that helps with sales and someone that helps with marketing and someone that helps with like fundraising strategy. And so that's one way that a lot of like larger funds can be really helpful because they have those big teams of resources. And so smaller funds just have to find other ways to build like their version of a platform. So we actually at Vitalize have like what we call our founder platform. It's literally an online website that only our founders have access to, and they can go there for hiring tools. They can go find like discounts to, let's say they need to put an accounting software in place. Like, they can find kind of anything they're looking for to build up their own toolkit. And that's like our version of a platform. They can put in a request for, hey, I'm looking for introductions to, I don't know, Microsoft, like, who can you get me an intro to there? And so that's like our version of a platform. And each venture fund typically has some version of that.
Awesome. I've myself benefited from that quite a bit, especially recently. We were looking at one of the technologies you guys provided, which has been awesome. Okay, moving right along. The last question I have for you related to kind of this space is, I think a lot of founders, when they're starting to build their companies and consider bringing on capital, should they be going and raising from VC? Should they be going and raising from angels? Should they not be raising at all? I would love your perspective on this.
Yeah, great one. I think it very much depends on the type of company and the founder's long-term goals. So it's like very much a personal question to whoever is building the company. But like, I think of venture backable companies as typically software. Typically, it's very scalable. And that's what venture and angel investors are looking for, something that they could like 30x the return on their investment. If you can't do that or don't think you really fit into what's like a venture backable company, maybe you're better off just getting like a loan to grow your business. Or, and when I say it, it depends on what people, what the founders like wants for their life. Some founders just want to build like a lifestyle business and like make revenue off that and just have like a cushy life and not spend all their time working on their business. And that would be another reason not to raise venture funding, because I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing to want to do. You just wouldn't want to raise money from VCs and then be under pressure to like hit all these metrics and grow your company really fast if that's not what you as a person want. So I think you have to think about like, one, what type is your business? And two, what is your long-term goal as a person?
I think there's some founders too that maybe want that 30x business, but when they're really considering what their business can and can't pull off, it maybe is a different conversation. So is there any additional questions you'd have a founder ask themselves? You know, obviously, is it scalable? Mm-hmm. What kind of lifestyle are you looking for? But like, is there anything else that can help niche that down?
Yeah, personally, I encourage founders to like do their own market sizing. And I think a lot of founders just don't really know how to do it. And so they just go search on the internet, like, what is the total hospitality industry size? And like, that's what they put for their market size. But what I encourage founders to do is actually look at like what your average contract value is today. Find out how many potential customers of yours exist, like starting in just the United States, for example, and multiply that by your average contract value. And that's like a true market sizing of your specific product. And then you can kind of get a sense of, based on the market size, like, could this be a 30x potential? And you're almost like doing yourself what the investor is also doing. And I think it just gives you a better sense of your business and a sense of like how the investor is thinking about things. So you're aligned.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity for founders to talk themselves into this should be venture backable, but maybe it necessarily isn't if you do it that way. So I appreciate that. But I also think that there's moments where a lot of founders really just want to like live into the hype of raising from VC too. And so that's a really good way to kind of like reel yourself back of like, is this something that's worth it and actually something worth doing?
And on that note, if I can just share one piece of advice for founders, you're actually better off if you can raise less money and get more profitable and retain more ownership yourself. And I, to your point, I think a lot of founders are caught up in the hype of like needing high valuations and raising millions, tens of millions of dollars because they want like an announcement that they did that. And really, you're better off if you can build a profitable, successful business and retain most of the ownership yourself.
Yeah, of course. And then if you decide you are, you know, doing an extension or growth on the company to go raise in the future, you're going to get much better terms for it. Mm-hmm. Or if you decide it's time to exit, of course, you're going to get a lot better of a, you know, personal return on that business as well if you decide to exit. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that's the secret I learned very early on was raising more money doesn't mean you're running a good business necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. You know?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Caroline, for doing this. I really appreciate it. Yeah. Love the rapid fire questions, and you're such a trooper for doing it with me. Is there anything else that you think founders should know about you or, you know, building their businesses or Vitalize that I didn't ask you about?
I think you covered it all. Yeah, we love partnering with companies like Lucia and always happy to connect with any founders that are interested in Vitalize, or if you feel like you fit in the future of work, kind of work tech space, please go to our website. We actually have an application where founders can apply directly and it helps us filter if you're the right fit or not, so we don't waste your time if it's not a fit for us, and would love to have anyone apply.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And I can attest to that. They've been lovely over at Vitalize, especially within the Angel Network. So thank you so much for supporting Lucia. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.